Dr. Show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 90. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. 90th episode, and it's time to get healthy, right? We're in spring. Summer's right around the corner. It's time to get healthy. And how do we get healthy? Well, not just through personal change, which is something that's important. And if you go to my blog, I've talked about this a number of times, and I mentioned it in this week's episode. I did lose 40 pounds at one point, and a lot of that was just through personal choices, just sort of editing my diet, getting more active, eating less, drinking less alcohol, which that to me is always kind of the big challenge. It's like, I don't mind eating healthy. I kind of enjoy it. I feel better. When I eat poorly, it really, like, my health just goes in the toilet, and I go, ugh. And I'd rather just eat healthy almost all the time. But it's the beer. I love the craft beer. We live in Denver, for God's sakes. There's new breweries opening, it seems like, every week. And so how do you avoid that? That's my sort of health challenge. That's my healthy weight challenge. But for some, it's not as easy. And it's not due to laziness. It's not due to personal choices. It's due to systemic reasons. How is our built environment? How is our school system? How is our culture making us fat? You know, and fat might be the wrong word. How is it contributing to the obesity epidemic? And that's why I talked to this week's guest. It is Shepard Neville, and he is the CEO of Live Well Colorado. They are a nonprofit, and they are focused on minimizing and, dare I say, eliminating obesity and contributing to greater overall health and greater overall wellness. And as I sat down with him, I was struck by just what a cool guy he was. We had a great chat. You'll notice at the beginning of this episode, we're talking about like Kelsey Grammer and spinoff shows. And I mean, he's got a good mind for pop culture. I mean, we end up talking about the Flintstones, and there's various things scattered throughout here. Dana Carvey. And he's just a really super interesting guy. And he's a really good fit for Live Well, because Live Well advocates for a lot of different things. And when you think about obesity, we probably think about personal choice more than anything. But that's something of a misguided notion, and I think Shepard articulates some of the things that are contributing to our decline in health that we may not be aware of. And depending on where you live, there could be some physical environment things that are doing that you also wouldn't know about. So just an enormously insightful, entertaining, and illustrative episode. This episode was brought to me by Taylor Gonda, who I had interviewed, you remembered, from a couple episodes back. She's the co-host of These Things Matter. Probably, outside of mine, my favorite podcast in Denver. They do just such a great job, and it's a pleasure to listen to every week. Well, she works with Shepard, and we came together, and this was an idea, and I thought it was a great idea for an episode. And when you listen to it, I think you'll agree. This one is just entertaining, and you get a lot of info and stuff that you wouldn't know already. Which brings me to my next point. If you have an idea for an episode, if you yourself are doing interesting work, you know someone who's doing great work, or you want me to cover something in particular that I haven't covered yet, shoot me a note. Get to me on Facebook. Send me a message on Twitter. Hit me up on Pinterest, Snapchat. However you want to do it, I'm on all four of those platforms under the same handle. It's J-O-A-T Pod. I want to hear from you. If you have an interesting job or you know someone who does, send them my way. I'd love to talk to them. I love getting references, because I'm out there hustling all the time. I'm looking for new episodes. Some of the best ones come from you. They come from your brain. They come from the people that you know. Send them my way. I'd be happy to talk to them. So, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, all of them J-O-A-T Pod. I'm open for suggestions. So, let's get to one of the episodes that came from a suggestion. This is episode 90 of the John of All Trades podcast. It features Shepard Neville, just a great guy doing incredible work. I'm proud to bring this one to you. He is the CEO of Live Well Colorado, and his episode starts right now.
Yeah, of her podcast, yeah.
Of that one in particular? Yeah. Do you listen to others?
I think mostly hers, to tell you the truth. Nowadays, I tend to, you know,
right.
I'll probably gravitate to yours.
Oh, well, that's, well, certainly
I'm a serial
now.
I'm a serial devotee.
Okay, you binge them.
Yes, I've been trimmed, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the model now. That's Netflix. That's
Netflix. That's how we see the Netflix series.
I just went through Fuller House.
Oh, okay.
Just for the historical
curiosity.
Kind of a nostalgia kick a little bit.
Yeah.
And I found it altogether not terrible.
Really?
Which I don't think they'll put on the series reviews if they ever come out with a box set.
So I thought this might be the after MASH. You know.
Right. Or Baywatch Nights.
Baywatch Nights. Yeah.
So, but...
I remember the Rhoda show after Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
You know, some of these things just don't carry through.
You know, the one that really carried through, though, was Frasier after Cheers.
Yeah.
Probably the most successful spinoff of all time.
Maybe. And also, I think he's the longest running character. Because if you count the 11 years of Cheers and the 9 years or whatever, so 20, 21 years, nobody has ever played the same character on a sitcom for so many years.
No kidding.
I know according to my sources.
Okay. What's funny to me is Kelsey Grammer is not like that in real life either. He's an unusual cat.
Yeah. Well, I know he's a serious guy, right?
He's like...
But he suffered some... I guess what I'm saying is he suffered some serious...
He did.
His sister was murdered, I think. Right?
There was that. He was also... He had some alcohol problems.
Yeah.
And when he would show up to the Cheers set, sometimes he'd roll up like in his sandals. And he was like California surfer guy Kelsey. But he's playing this uptight, stuffy, like Boston psychiatrist,
right, yeah.
Which I always knew him as Dr. Fraser Crane.
Right.
So when you hear about that, you go, what?
So he's naturally laid back. He's more of a Jimmy Buffett type.
Huh? Kind of, yeah, from what I understand.
I did not know that.
And, you know, sort of off-color jokes and that kind of thing. So
people portray different things. You know, Alec Baldwin played a conservative. And he's far left on the spectrum. So.
Extremely far left.
It's called acting.
I've heard of that.
Exactly.
So sitting here with Shepard Neville.
Some people call me Neville Shepard, but they get understandably confused. But it's Shepard Neville.
Okay. And you are the CEO of Livewell Colorado?
That is correct.
And how long have you been doing this now?
Almost 2 years.
Okay. And how's it been going?
I think it's great. You know, our mission is to reduce and prevent obesity and other chronic conditions by promoting and increasing physical activity and healthy eating. And if you do those two things right, you're about 60-70% all along the way for health.
What's the other like 30% then?
Well, good question. So 10% is healthcare.
Okay, sure.
And then 20% is genetics. So if you think about it in terms of a pie with money, we spend about $2.6 trillion
uh-huh.
a year on health in this country, more per capita by far than any nation in the world.
Wow, okay.
And about 88% of that is spent on health care. So that's hospitals,
right.
Doctors, specialists, medical supplies and equipment, pharmaceuticals,
mm-hmm.
and health plans. And that contributes to about 10% of health outcomes. So if you're sick and you need antibiotics, it's 100% of your health that week. But in the lifespan, in a person's lifespan or in the life of a community, all of that health care contributes to about 10% of health.
Wow.
But it consumes about 88% of our dollars, whereas 70% of our health comes from environment. You know, you're getting enough sleep, and really critically, are you exercising on a regular basis and eating healthy? And so our organization, I think, is part of a larger movement, and we're trying to help accelerate the movement, that health happens to a large degree outside the doctor's office. And it has enormous equity and other socioeconomic implications because you or I could choose to eat healthy and engage in physical activity if we can overcome our own inertia
right,
and
of
laziness,
course.
Right? Or the irresistible attraction to the screen.
Yeah.
Or the podcast, which you can listen to while you exercise.
That's right. And many do, and I encourage that.
But then we can do that. But for a lot of people in the United States, including in Colorado,
right.
They don't have a safe place to walk. They don't have access to healthy, affordable food. So we talk about the barriers to healthy eating, active living. And we do a lot of work in more than 20 communities and with more than 40 local governments and more than 90 school districts to help reach about 1 million Coloradans a year to improve their access to healthy eating and physical activity.
So you're talking about systemic change.
Talking about systemic change, exactly.
So it's easy to sort of put all the responsibility for 70% of your health on yourself.
Right.
But what you're referencing are barriers that inhibit people, both sort of from the outside and dealing with people's internal motivations. But they can come together, and that creates an overall picture of what you're talking about when you talk about wellness and health. Is that correct?
Not to flatter you, but you just gave one of the best descriptions of what we do and the larger ecosystem that I've heard in a long time. That's exactly right. That personal element is important.
Sure.
And there are great books, like if you've read The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, I highly recommend it, that can really get people to make the default the healthier choice and activity in their own lives. And he talks about, in a broader sense, corporate wellness too.
But a
successful organization. But you're right. If you live in Westwood or Huerfano County or a lot of other places in this state, even if you make that personal commitment, you may not have the access to it.
Okay.
So it's a big deal.
Well, I was going to ask you, in terms of what you do, how are the challenges different, like in Denver versus rural parts of the state? Like, how do those challenges manifest? What is different about what you do in a metro area versus in a rural community?
It's a great question. We work in both communities. I would say that a couple things. One, poverty and the lack of act and the barriers to healthy eating, active living tend to be more geographically isolated in urban areas. Okay. So you can go to Stapleton and see one thing, and then Montbello and see something else.
Right. And I used to live in Stapleton, so you're absolutely right.
Right. You can appreciate it. A couple miles away, it's a whole different scenario and environment that is either conducive or not conducive to health. In the rural areas, I think the barriers are more comprehensive, and you have entire counties and entire clusters of counties on the Western Slope, Eastern Plains, et cetera, that face real serious obstacles to wellness and health care.
And what types of obstacles are they facing? Can you describe those a little bit?
Yeah. For instance, I was in Leadville, and they were talking about the challenges of having access to healthy and affordable food, specifically fruits and vegetables. And so if a grocery store didn't offer it, they had to go many, many miles, or they couldn't get it at all. And in Trinidad, a person who was not without resources, wasn't necessarily wealthy, but had health insurance, and said that my primary care doc retired and they had to go to Pueblo, for the health care that they needed. So those are the kind of examples that I mentioned Huerfano County. I walked with our LiveWell community coordinator there, and they said, if you're a 10-year-old kid and you live there, this is what you have to navigate in order to walk. Whereas when I grew up, my mom didn't drive. I was one of five kids.
Right.
I cycled everywhere, took the bus.
I grew up in suburban Denver. I mean, I used to ride my bike to the pool and to school and wherever.
And we could. But if you're in parts of Colorado, rural or urban, where you don't have access to a safe sidewalk or street, or the train comes 15 times a day.
Wow.
Or there's tracks, or there's just not a paved road that connects one place to the other. Or you don't have access to a rec center, a safe, accessible place to engage in physical activity or just good fun.
So it's interesting to me, I'm struck by listening to you talk about this, that in terms of when we think of obesity, and I told a few people that I was coming to interview you today, and they said, don't they do those commercials with, overweight versus obese versus normal, healthy body weight? I think those were before your time, before you came on
here.
What you're talking about is, and that seems focused on how can you take charge of your own health.
Right.
When you talk about access to paved roads and sidewalks and walkable and bikeable communities, that's not something I think people associate with obesity. So the work that you do is almost beyond the scope of just pure health in the minds of most people. Would you say that's accurate?
That's exactly right. And you hit the nail on the head at least a couple times. One is LiveWell in its earlier years did focus on general public education and personal awareness. So we did what you're referring to as the gut check campaign.
Right.
And it got 700,000 Coloradans, 400,000 immediately, and then over time, 700,000, to go on our website and check their own BMI.
Okay.
And that's important. But as you also mentioned, as the organization evolved, we realized we have to do more than that. And people are aware of obesity now, but we have to translate it to how people live. So what do you do or don't do to promote physical activity and access healthy eating at the workplace where you spend more hours than any place or most people do?
Right.
And then schools where kids consume and expend half of their calories in the whole day. What are we doing to create a healthier environment in our schools? And there's very cost-effective things we can do, and we're heavily involved on the school lunch side. And so it's same thing in community. And so what is often referred to as that built environment,
yeah,
you know, the physical infrastructure of a community that makes it more likely or less likely that you're going to go outside and walk. And we all know that kind of feeling,
yeah,
whether you can walk or not. And that's extremely important. You're right. That all adds up to health. And so, you know, we have communities that are like in Montrose that actually have a pharmacy prescription program where the prescription is fruit and vegetables.
Okay.
And so we really do have to start thinking about that.
Does that feel insane that you need a prescription for that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, the idea is to create some financial incentives and to improve access.
Yeah.
And to bring to the pharmacy, you get the prescription and then you buy the fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
But we have been, I think it's changing.
Okay.
But if you wanted to design, you know, if you wanted to be outcome oriented and you wanted to do what they often refer to now as design thinking, and you were starting from scratch and your outcome was to get as good health outcomes for as many people, regardless of race, income, geography, ethnicity, mm-hmm. sexual orientation, regardless of circumstances, to get the best health outcome for as many people as possible. The system we have now and how we allocate the $2.6 trillion a year for health in this country would be very different. And one of the ways it would be different, and it's happening, is that we would put more resources, what's often referred to as upstream, mm-hmm. preventing illness rather than just treating it. And so if you look at the common threads between preventable chronic conditions and serious illnesses, whether it's various forms of cancer, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, obesity. The common threads are diet and physical activity. Now, is that the only thing? No. There's genetics and there's other factors. Mm-hmm. But those are two things that you keep getting back to when you talk about improving health and bringing down costs. And so we're moving it from an afterthought to a primary consideration.
That's how real transformation happens.
That's how real transformation happens, yeah.
I guess my question is, your biggest enemy has got to be entrenched thinking then.
Yes.
And how do you go about changing minds? And do you ever get people who think you're trying to do almost like social engineering?
We are sensitive to the perception of the nanny state.
Yeah, that, I actually wrote that in my notes.
And to this...
The Bloomberg New York City soda thing.
Right.
People react very sort of... I don't know, vociferously, but that kind of
thing.
Yeah,
exactly. And it can trivialize some very serious issues.
Sure.
Now, I think Mayor Bloomberg was a terrific mayor, mm-hmm. and he's got a tremendous legacy in public safety, environment, and health, and a lot of other areas. Having said that, I do think that that particular strategy, while well-intended, was misguided.
It missed the mark a little bit?
I think it missed the mark a little bit.
In what way?
Well, because I think that it lent itself to being caricatured.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And the more important question is, how do we reduce the availability of and the marketing of sugar-sweetened beverages for our kids, and particularly in the most impacted communities, the low-income communities, when we know, and there's all kinds of research of the highest variety, randomized trials, that demonstrate that sugar-sweetened beverages probably just by itself as a product, contributes as much as 15%, 18% of childhood obesity. Wow. If you drink one sugar-sweetened beverage, you've consumed more sugar for the day than you should, more for a few days. So his intent was good, but the strategy probably has to be, to use the word you used earlier, a little more systemic. And I'll give you an example. Colorado in 2009 eliminated sugar-sweetened beverages from the schools. And there was a little pushback at the beginning that it would cost schools money. That proved not to be the case. It was revenue neutral or positive because we have a great free market system. And the beverage sector figured out how to sell water, you know, and that's a good thing.
Right.
Whether you get it for free or you pay for it, water is probably the best beverage you can consume.
Yeah, I love water. I can't get it.
And the Alliance for Healthier Generation, a great national organization, estimated that it reduced sodas in schools by 70%. Same objective, different strategies.
Yeah, different implementation.
Different implementation.
I get it.
Exactly.
That makes sense. You brought up kids a couple of times, and I know that you work I looked at your 2020 strategic goals, mm-hmm. which I thought were terrific and very well articulated.
Thank you.
I'm interested in some of the challenges that you face, though, especially in terms of schools. And notably, do you run up against, in terms of physical activity, things like standardized testing?
Yes. I think one of the biggest challenges has been the shrinking school day.
Right.
I don't mean the day is necessarily getting shorter,
right.
but the availability of time for two, I think, really critical pillars of a good, well-rounded education. Mm-hmm. And that's arts and culture, the arts, and physical education. And so Colorado, this surprises some people because we boast justifiably of our 300 days of sunshine a year, and we have a very fit adult population.
Right.
We're one of only four states in the United States of America that does not have a statewide PE requirement in our schools. Think about that.
I went to school here, and I remember I had PE all the time, but I just assumed that was a requirement. It's not.
A lot of people think it is. Now, we have polling that shows that over 80% of active voters in Colorado, actually 86% to be precise, support PE in our schools,
sure.
even at the expense of class time. So that's an example. That's one of the challenges that we have, is we have a strong sense of a tradition of local control, that the local school districts can determine their own policies.
Their
and
own
generally,
yeah.
I support that. But I do think it's not unreasonable to join the ranks of 46 other states and have a statewide PE requirement, particularly because parents overwhelmingly support it. But you're right. But the reason I brought up that particular statistic was a response to your good question. What about the pressure of testing? And the polling question that was done by a third party, highly credible pollster, not us, said even at the expense of class time. So that's what parents and Coloradans want for their kids. And we also know that it, in the longer term, it actually improves learning and academic achievement.
Okay.
Because there is a direct connection between physical activity and cognitive function.
That's powerful statistics that you've shared with me. And one of the things I'm wondering is, as you sort of understand LiveWell, if you go to your website and you look at it, it's largely blue sky, and it's largely positive, and your vibe is generally, you're not going to war with people.
Right.
But as an organization, do you find yourself at odds with other interests in education, and how do you navigate that, or is that not LiveWell's role?
Yeah, we do find ourselves at odds, but I would say that for the most part, not entirely, our issues, particularly, as you said, when you go from the broad Healthy Eating Active Living and talk about what does it really mean, mm-hmm. like ensuring that kids have safe places to walk and that we have parks and access right. to recreational opportunity in every community, that polls well in conservative El Paso County and it polls well in Denver.
Okay.
And as I mentioned also, this notion that kids should, as part of their school day, have physical exercise and physical education in the school day, that generally bipartisan.
Right.
And that they should have access to a healthy meal. And so the 90 school districts that we work with and that receive our input and technical support very well, ask for it and seem to appreciate it, cover all, counties in terms of politics and geography. But occasionally we do, for instance, in advancing physical education in the schools, you do get some opposition, and we understand it mm-hmm. from school districts that, to the point you made earlier, feel a lot of pressure to do a lot of things and have a lot of mandates on them already and probably not enough funding.
Right, yeah.
We're sensitive to that. Now, in other areas where you might anticipate there to be some tension, we have been very pleased that, for instance, we convened CEOs of fast casual restaurant chains headquartered here. And to give credit where credit's due, the governor joined us. So I suspect he might have been a bigger draw for them to spend a half day with us than Shepard Neville of LiveWell. But
come on.
But yeah, it was a little bit, maybe 50-50.
Yeah, right.
50 John, 50 me.
Of course.
But in any event, when they got there, it was clear that they had given a lot of thought to and were very aware of the market demand from their diners, mm-hmm. their customers, for more nutritious options. And so then we've gotten past the debate of should we and gotten to the point
right.
of how would we. There's still issues that create political controversy in this space.
Right.
For instance, the emerging movement to have sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. Hmm. The beverage industry is strongly opposed to that. Public health community in general is moving more and more in that direction. But I don't want to suggest that there aren't flashpoints of controversy. Mm-hmm. But compared to, for instance, the very important work in the health payment and delivery system reform and health coverage side, for instance, the debate regarding the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
I think that this tends to be less partisan.
Well, if these things pull so well and everyone seems to be on the same page that we should provide physical activity for kids and that we should provide, you know, healthy eating, what are the roadblocks to implementation? And I would say you have an impressive slate of projects that you've already accomplished.
Yeah.
What prevents you from full implementation or everyone realizing this, or, you know, what is keeping you from ultimate success?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, I think a couple of things. One, our food systems, a lot of it is legacies from, you know, our commodity subsidies comes from 1933,
okay.
You know, when the nation was deep in famine and probably outdated, but they're deeply rooted. And we don't broadly, although we're piloting a couple of things, but we don't broadly subsidize healthy food like fruits and vegetables. And then I also think part of it is not active opposition, but it's just not thinking about it. So, for instance, when a new proposed development comes to a city government, planning department, or up to their city council or county commission, there are a series of things you think about, but whether it creates a healthful environment is something that if it's brought to their attention, they say, yeah, I think that's important. But it's not embedded historically in the comprehensive planning process.
Okay.
But that can change. 30, 40 years ago, people didn't think about energy efficiency, and now LEED certification almost becomes a must-have for so many developments.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we look at those things that weren't top of mind and are now.
Sure.
And from our perspective, trying to catalyze this statewide movement and make the healthy choice the easy choice and the default choice, we do look at those other areas like in environmentalism and in human rights and in education where you tap into that public sentiment. But it takes a while. It takes a while. The other constraint is time and money. And it is, for a variety of reasons, it can be a little more time-consuming and more expensive to prepare a healthy meal than if you're a single mom with four kids with a non-traditional hours to your job.
Yeah.
Than stopping in and getting, you know, four meals at McDonald's.
Right.
And so it's there's constraints of time and,
sure.
and money.
What's funny to me though is starting in late 2012, and took me 8.5 months, but I lost 40 pounds.
Wow.
Which was great. It was fantastic. And as I look back on it.
Over 8 months?
Yeah.
That's about 5 pounds a month.
Yeah. 8.5 months. So.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, about 5 pounds a month,
yeah.
A little over a pound a week. And as I think back on it and I think about the simple kind of swaps that I did,
yeah.
It really isn't that difficult.
Mm-mm.
And the thing that you need to remember is it's a marathon, not a sprint, which is what you're alluding to.
It's a marathon, not a sprint, yeah.
A lot of people, when you see people lose weight, they put it back on. It's almost like they cross the goal line and spike the football. And it's like, I don't have to do this anymore. Well, no. What you want is almost systemic change within yourself. And then it just becomes the way of things. Is that what you're getting at on a cultural level?
Yes, exactly. It becomes the new reality. And there was a time when drinking and driving was, you know, a point of humor.
Right.
And then it...
And I chuckle because that seems so absurd now.
And that seems so absurd. There was a time where people just didn't think about the amount of lead in their gasoline. And then 98% of the lead was removed from the gasoline. And you wouldn't ever consider the lead going back in gasoline.
Yeah, my wife works in real estate, and there is still to this day lead paint disclosure in every real estate contract that you sign.
Yeah.
If there's lead in your paint, and it seems insane that you would ever paint with that now.
But right.
You're right, that was the way of things.
Yeah, this notion that the government will help support the protection of our air that we breathe and the water that we drink mm-hmm. is pretty widespread. But there was a time that didn't happen, and we see now with Flint that it's still not happening in some cases.
That it can fall down.
Yeah, yeah, particularly related to, unfortunately, race and income and ethnicity. So there's more to be done there. But those are things that weren't accepted norms and they are now. And there's a lot of examples of those, I think. Another one just that comes to mind, if you don't mind me jumping in again. I often show this in presentations. It was not too long ago that Camel would advertise doctors recommend Camel the most.
Right.
And so the whole notion of cigarettes is...
The doctors recommended cigarettes.
Yeah, doctors recommended cigarettes.
Yeah, Fred Flintstone smoking a cigarette. I think his brand was Lucky Strike, though.
Was it really?
I think so.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's more of a discussion for, Taylor and Kevin.
Yeah, for These Things Matter.
These Things Matter in the pop culture.
Yeah. What was your favorite cigarette ad? I picked up smoking personally because that cool talking camel told me to.
Right. Or I was thinking of what great cultural references were in the Flintstones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like Cary Grant.
Oh,
and
right.
Then Rock Hudson, which they didn't have to change because
no, that's perfect.
Yeah, you know, the name was perfect,
right?
For prehistoric times, but we're digressing.
Yeah, no, and that's what we do here. In terms of instituting this systemic change, what keeps you up at night in achieving it?
I think it's a great question. I think level of intensity, the fact that people recognize this is important, but it hasn't quite broken through as something that's important and requires policies and practices to change in a more systemic way. So I think we have the level of support and awareness, but that intensity.
Sure.
And how to drive home the point that when we are justifiably concerned about violence and gun violence and terrorism, mm-hmm. and we should be, but that the order of magnitude is many times greater for the number of people who die in this country, totally avoidable and preventable due to poor diet and physical inactivity. And the American Heart Association estimates it conservatively at 350,000 people.
Yikes.
So the fact is that we are, to some extent, without being overdramatic, we are physically inactive and poorly eating ourselves to death. And so we live and breathe it, and we recognize its urgency. And so we're trying to nudge that often used phrase from Malcolm Gladwell, the tipping point,
yep.
to coin a cliche.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the business of nudging that tipping point. And the other thing that is challenging is what you alluded to earlier, which is this is not a single issue, like don't drink and drive, which right. is really important.
Yeah, or stop smoking.
Stop smoking. This, just like you said in your question, is a series of critical and interrelated activities and sort of policy issues mm-hmm. related to the built environment, our schools, our place of work, our communities.
Yeah.
And so it's a little challenging to wrap it up in one phrase.
Do you find it challenging then to focus your energies or... because it encompasses so many different types of things, whether it's school lunches or whether it's modifying the built environment
right.
in communities, is it difficult to find the correct areas to focus on?
That has been an exercise to go through, and we did that with some great folks, really smart people, not just from the health and wellness field, but just smart people who run other organizations
sure.
and bring a lot of value. And we did drill down, if you will, to our five areas, school food, food access and demand. So that's under healthy food and with physical activity.
And just so you know, this is sitting on the mantle in Shepherd's office.
Right. School activity, youth recreational opportunities, and active transportation.
Okay,
really meaning
gotcha.
Walking and biking. So walking, biking, recreation, schools for food and physical activity. And then the food systems that we were talking about.
Right.
Still pretty broad, but it does narrow it a little bit. But it does underscore the value of your question, that's one of the challenges is the breadth of it. Having said that, these are all most of them are cost-effective strategies.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to do them in a more integrated way.
Sure.
And so it is very, you know, creating pedestrian access is much less expensive than the also important but far more expensive work of building new roads and maintaining them. So you're talking about crosswalks.
Right.
And
bike lanes, that kind of thing.
Bike lanes and stop signs and lighting and signalization and these kind of things that can improve pedestrian safety and activity. We have terrific third-party evaluation of the impact of what we do.
I gotcha.
Because we focus on what is referred to as evidence-based strategies. In other words, the kind of activities that have been demonstrated to increase in a meaningful way physical activity and healthy eating amongst people who otherwise would face access issues to both.
Okay.
And so to give you an example, in Lake County, in a school there, improving the playground at the school increased physical activity by 24%.
And how does one improve a playground?
Well, you improve the physical infrastructure, and you improve the equipment. You replace
the equipment. So you just make it better. I just meant, is there a type of playground that's optimized versus, like, in terms of the equipment itself? What's the best types of things to have there?
I think it's a great question. I think the kinds of things that encourage people, the kids, to climb,
sure,
and walk and swing and move.
Right.
And that also has safety features so that when they inevitably slip and fall,
sure,
it's a temporary rather than a day-long delay from, you know, interruption of their physical activity.
I used to make a joke that my generation, I'm 34, was the last generation with really, like, hardcore playground equipment.
Yeah.
That was made of metal and wood.
Yeah, I had those too.
And above, you know, concrete. And now you go to the playground and it's all like wood chips. It's all like this rubber. And I thought, well, this, you know, this is nice, but these kids today, they're soft.
Right.
They're soft.
We're both at risk of sounding like the Dana Carvey angry old man from Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Yeah, and when we were kids, we would get splinters, and we liked it.
We liked it that way.
Right. Yeah, I like the way you describe the playground. Yeah. But I remember those playgrounds, too.
Yeah, there was this slide.
We would wipe the blood off our face and keep going. And we liked it.
When I used to slide down the metal slide, I'd burn my thighs, and that was okay. It toughened me right up. I liked it.
Exactly. We may be losing some of your younger listeners with a Dana Carvey circa 1985 reference. I don't know.
They'll be fine. You know what? It's YouTube, kids. Look it up. So everything that was ever available, always and forever. I would think Patton Oswalt coined that term.
Yes.
He calls it et-a-waf. Yeah, everything that ever was, always, forever.
Right, which puts a chill on childhood behavior that that I didn't experience, maybe you didn't either.
No. I was in college when Facebook, like, was invented.
Yeah.
Like, me and Mark Zuckerberg are approximately the same age.
Yeah.
And so when it came out, one of my roommates was on Facebook, and he said, I go, what is this? And he goes, oh, it's Facebook. You can connect with people from your college. And I go, huh, interesting. You know how I do that? I go to the college, man. Like, I go and I talk to people at the college. You should try it. I had no idea Facebook was going to become a thing.
If you did.
Yeah, really. I guess I have egg on my face because I got my notification. I've been on for 6 years.
Really? Yeah.
So whatever. One question I always love to ask every one of my guests, considering the scope and the breadth of what you do and the sort of, call it importance of and the weight of what you're trying to achieve, what does an average day look like for you?
Well, it's a good question. I think it's one part internal management. Again, it's trite but very true that the most important indicator of the success of an organization, for-profit or not-for-profit, public sector, private sector, is the clarity of the mission and the quality of the people.
Yeah, the strength of your team.
The strength of the team. And so that's a high priority, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the internal piece. And then the external piece really falls into two categories. It's cultivating relationships for existing or new partnerships, and then it's development, fundraising. So my day tends to fall into those three buckets.
So, but I'm interested almost in like what the day-to-day looks like. Are you on the go? Are you on meetings? Is a lot of it done here? Like, just take me through what maybe a typical day, how it might unfold.
Well, a typical day could be starting in the office. We may have an all-team meeting. Then I could have a meeting with one of our partners externally, and then at lunch make a presentation to an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Then go back to the office, take a long nap. I'm just kidding. But I forgot what Patton Oswalt said. This is forever, right?
Well, depending on what they serve for lunch.
Right.
You know, it's like we gave you 32 on steak and 14 of our potato bacon bombs.
Right, exactly. And then you wonder why you're not feeling well.
Yeah.
But and then a lot of times I have in the evening, evening events.
Sure.
So usually work related, but we just have the environment in Denver, I think, I suspect you'll agree, is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I wrote a piece about this years ago for the Denver Post, but the business leaders talk like nonprofit leaders in terms of their constant reference to this civic community and their involvement. Mm-hmm. And nonprofits tend to be very businesslike and looking to maximize dollars. And
sure.
So we have a lot of good collaboration in this state, in this community. And so I just think it's a great place to work. So that makes the 2/3 of my job where I'm interacting with people externally mm-hmm. all the more enjoyable. I don't know what you think, but I think it's a nice place to work.
Does it ever wear on you though? Because I know in my corporate job, I had a lot of after work events. Mm-hmm. There were times where I remember thinking, I'm like, I just want to go home. Like it can be a grind and people think it's so glamorous. You know, they'll see photos of you at a cocktail reception or black tie dinner or, you know, out talking with the governor or Senator Bennett or someone. And inside, there are times where you're thinking to yourself, like, oh, my God, like I have this night after night after night. And it starts to lose its shine a little bit. That's at least my experience.
Well, first of all, thank you, because I've never been accused of being glamorous before. That's not a word that's often associated with me. But it's all balance.
Sure.
And I'm also very lucky to have a wonderful wife and 3 wonderful children. And so family time is also very important.
Of course.
Sometimes we blend the two and I try to right. persuade one of the kids to come to something with me. And it's not every night.
Okay. So, that's good.
But it's the ones who really have that tough, and I think they deserve a lot of appreciation, are the elected officials.
Oh, gosh.
Because they go, I may go to 3 events a week. They'll go to 3 events a night.
Yeah.
Or more. And just one right after another. So,
yeah.
So incredible. Save that question for Senator Bennett or Governor Hickloop.
I will reach out to their team.
Yeah.
In terms of what makes you successful, what do you think is one of the biggest keys to doing a job that has this kind of profile? How do you maintain your drive? How do you achieve success? What's the biggest thing for you?
Well, my father used to say that if you love what you do, you almost can't work too hard. And if you don't love what you do, the day can't be short enough for you.
Right, yeah.
So I've been lucky, and this is in the spirit of your wonderful show, but I've tried throughout my career to be earning enough to support myself and my family doing something I really love and I feel passionate about. And having been in and out of the health care business for many years, I started my career as an attorney for a hospital system. Mm,
okay.
And then before this, worked for the Colorado Health Foundation. It's a real joy and pleasure, I think, and I see it as a under-cultivated opportunity that could be better cultivated, to focus on prevention and wellness, because I think you get a very high ROI, and I think it's also a way to make Colorado not only a healthier state, but a more economically vibrant one, because we know health and economic productivity
yeah.
go hand in hand, and also a more just one, because we know that access to health care and wellness too often correlates with race, income, geography, ethnicity, and place of national origin. And so I see this as part of the larger vision, if you will, that people far more impressive than me are devoting their lives to make Colorado and our nation a more just place and a place of real opportunity for everybody.
I was going to ask you what compelled you, and you kind of answered it there, but you know, why this field? Why wellness? Why healthcare? Because it sounds like nearly the entirety of your career has been spent in healthcare in some form or fashion. I saw you've worked for some elected officials in some other
right.
capacities.
For Mayor Webb, yeah.
For Mayor Webb. But why this? I mean, what did you always know you wanted to do this?
Well, I think this is one of the areas that have been a big elements in my career. If you don't have health and wellness, and if you think about the 2 or 3 or 4 things that are most important for quality of life, mm-hmm. that people want to be safe and they want to have economic security. You know, they want to have a decent standard of living. They
yeah.
want to have enough income to have a decent standard of living. They want to have access to education for themselves and their children. and they want their health and wellness. And so it's one of the, I think, the pillars of a successful person and community and of a country. And so to be working, I think, in one of those areas is a privilege. And I do see great opportunities in the public sector, in the nonprofit sector, and in the business sector, the for-profit sector, to advance health and work with a lot of companies who are, as they say, doing good and doing well.
Yeah.
You know, they're creating jobs and having successful businesses, which is fantastic. And they're also, like in the digital health sector, which is growing by leaps and bounds in Colorado, they're also creating more tools for people to advance their own health, to take ownership of their own health. And I think, as we've touched upon here a little bit here and there, there's still great opportunities for public policy at the local and state level and for employers. And so I just think this is one of those areas that there's probably not an individual or a company or an organization that doesn't have a little slice of interest in,
right, yeah,
in the wellness movement, if you will.
Right. It's always energizing to talk to someone who likes to be involved in change, because you talk to so many people in their jobs, and I feel bad for folks who they look ahead and they know what today's going to look like,
right,
because it's going to look like yesterday, and tomorrow's probably going to be the same thing. And then all of a sudden it's 40 years later. Right. And so if you can get involved in a change action oriented sort of industry or a cause or an issue, I mean, that'll keep you alive.
It's true. It does. I think you're right. And if you like what you do, that contributes to your health as well.
Yeah, 100%.
And being in a less than healthy work environment, and I've got a book behind me that talks about this at length, can increase your risk, for instance, of a heart attack by more than 30%. So it really matters.
Yeah, I spent 2 ill-advised months in a job that I won't mention here in the interest of protecting the guilty here.
Right, exactly.
But during that 2 months, I mean, I felt physically ill almost every day.
Yeah.
And I dreaded going into work. And my health started to suffer. I felt sick. I felt just nauseous all the time. And it was miserable. I mean, the mental started to affect the physical.
I agree. And to anybody who might be listening that might be in a job they don't like, and most of us are there at some point in the course of our lives,
yeah,
I would echo what you just said. And it doesn't even have to be a different company.
Yeah.
It could be. When I was running the Denver Workforce Region, I remember there was a terrific employee who just didn't enjoy doing contracts administration, but really enjoyed working with people, so ran a youth program. And that's just an example where you can take ownership of your own career to the extent possible and find something. With it might be just a refinement, but find something that you really love or approach the job you're doing a little bit differently.
Yeah, you have more agency than you think.
You have more agency than you think. That's a better way to put it.
So a couple of frivolous questions here. Mm-hmm. First one is, when you're not doing this, what do you like to do in your downtime?
Well, be with my family, travel. My wife and I and my friends and I cycle a fair amount.
Yeah.
And I am an amateur playwright with the emphasis on the word amateur.
Okay, very good.
Although there was one play where people actually paid money to get inside, but
yes.
Right.
So no longer an amateur playwright.
Well,
you're a professional.
After the production costs, you know.
Well, fair
enough. It
wasn't
anything for me to retire on.
Well, no, but people still paid money to see something that you had written.
That is true.
That is the definition of a professional.
And let's not even talk about how many people knew me or members of my family.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It does not matter in the least.
Yeah. So,
favorite spots you've been?
Well, my wife is Cuban American.
Cool. All right.
And so that's become a destination of choice. And she has relatives there and friends there. And we've been there and we're going back. So that's become a favorite place. And not to sound too sentimental about our own place, but almost any place in Denver or Colorado, I love. I mean, I love this state. And I don't know if I've ever had a bad experience anywhere here.
I'd be inclined to agree. I took my daughter to the Natural History Museum, and they have that room with the big window that looks right at the
I think it's one of the back there in the Museum of Nature and Science. I think that's one of the nicest views.
Yeah. And I looked at it and I go, I can't believe I live here.
I've been to that same spot with my kids.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, your daughter Grace, right?
Yeah,
that's right. I heard from earlier podcast. Right? Oh, it's so probably funny. Just a few months old now, right?
She is currently, she just turned 17 months old.
Oh, wow. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's an exciting time.
It's, and I got another one coming in July.
Oh, wow. Double congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you know the gender?
Yeah, another girl.
Yeah. Great.
It'll be wild.
Great.
And so I got to ask this question to the executive director of Live Well Colorado. Favorite indulgence?
My favorite, you mean food-wise?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what it is, and I highly recommend it.
Okay, great.
I think the best ice cream in Denver is right down the street from here. Ice Cream Riot.
Ice Cream Riot. Okay. Yeah. I haven't been there.
Jim McNutt, one of those great Colorado stories. He was a production assistant working on the set of movies like Silver Linings Playbook with Robert De Niro and Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper. And he decides that he wants to reconnect with something he did in high school when he was selling ice cream with a friend. So he moves to Denver and he opens up an ice cream store.
Cool.
And I highly recommend it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've got the endorsement here.
Right.
From Shepherd Neville. Okay. Last question I'm going to ask you is, I've looked at your 2020 strategic goals. Mm-hmm. If Colorado, if you're successful, let's say best case scenario, mm-hmm. you achieve the goals that you want to achieve, what does Colorado look like at that point?
I think Colorado, it's a back to the future question. I think we go back to the obesity rates just 30, 40 years ago that were one third of what they are today. Hmm. And so I think we're looking at under 10% obesity rates for kids and hopefully 15% or less for adults. We're about 21% and about 11%, 21% for adults. So it's back to the future. It's not unachievable. If our obesity rates have tripled, they can be reduced by two-thirds again. Hmm. So that's the vision that I would see, is that we would return to obesity numbers of 30 or 40 years ago.
Okay.
And you put it in those terms, it doesn't sound too impossible.
No, it doesn't sound very hard at all.
Yeah.
How do our cities look different? Because I know one of the things that you all try and change is the built environment. So how do cities and towns and rural areas look different than they do now?
I think every community has its part of its ethos and as part of its development plan, safe places to walk and good places to engage in recreation. Hmm. And again, I think we have all kinds of positive examples of that. We just have to scale it up. And I think to get the engineers and local government and state government and the engineers at CDOT start thinking about what is referred to as active transportation as much as traditional transportation. Mm. Not to pit one against the other.
Right.
But to see them as two hands, right. You know, on the same human form.
Sure. Not or, but and.
Not or, but and.
Okay. Understood. Well, I think that sounds achievable. And I'll tell you what, listening to you talk about it, it seems eminently doable, and I hope you guys have great success with it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your interest.
So, absolutely. So now is the time in the show where you can plug whatever it is you want. So give us the plug for Live Well. How can we learn more about it? How can people get in touch with you if they so choose? Plug away, whatever it is.
Well, I appreciate that opportunity. We have two challenges ongoing right now. We have our film challenge. It's open to any college student in Colorado. The deadline is April 24th, and we're inviting college students to submit a film from 1 to 3 minutes in length that highlights from their perspective, their creative perspective, the importance of improving access to healthy eating and active living in our state.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good.
And we have a Oscar-winning producer who's going to be one of the judges, so you'll get in front of a pretty good panel of judges.
Yeah, heck of an audience.
And then we have one that's even for a broader audience, anybody over the age of 7 in Colorado. And we call it our Imagine Colorado. It's our Open Innovation Challenge, and we're doing it in partnership with the Colorado Innovation Network.
Cool.
And that is any idea that somebody wants to propose, doesn't need a business plan associated with, just the idea to advance healthy eating and active living in our state. And it can involve the public sector, it can involve the private sector, it can involve both. So that's our ideation challenge, our open innovation challenge.
Nice. Cool. And I'm sorry, when does that close again?
That closes April 15th.
Okay.
So tax day.
Okay.
Tax deadline day.
Big deadline day. So perfect.
And anybody also is welcome to go on our site, livewellcolorado.org, and make a contribution or sign up for our e-letter and join the movement.
That's right. Join the movement. Well, I'll tell you what, Shepard, this was enormously enlightening for me and a lot of fun. I appreciate just being able to talk about all the issues that we face as a culture and shed some more light on them.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's been great to talk to you, and I enjoy your show,
your podcast. Thank you very much. Continued success to you.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
And let's call episode 90 complete with Shepard Neville, CEO of LiveWell Colorado. Just a pleasure to talk with him and learn more about all of the things that contribute to our health that we wouldn't know otherwise. Just an enormously illuminating episode, and I wish them all the success in the world. Let's pay a couple of bills real quick. Our sponsor is 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. Incredible work in the web space that 4Degrees does. Building campaigns, building websites, getting you in front of the people that need to know what you do, and doing it in the most cost-effective fashion possible. I can't say enough nice things about 4Degrees. I mean, I suppose I could. I could do a whole episode where I just say nice things about them. That might be enough. But it probably wouldn't, because I'm very grateful for their support and I'm proud to promote their work. So, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check us out on the web. It's DEFTCOM.US. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. Give us a rating. Give us a review. And listen to all 90 episodes that I have in the back catalog. We've got a lot of good ones just waiting for you to hear them. New episode previews are on Monday. Those are on Facebook only, so J-O-A-T pod there. And we will be back next week with a fresh episode. We've got good stuff coming up. So until I see you again, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.